between Yom HaTzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim, I thought it'd be appropriate to discuss an issue that I think is dear to our hearts, and that is the notion of Zionism, and the idea of looking at Zionism from a halakhic perspective. This issue, while emotionally we are connected to the modern state of Israel and we believe in the modern state of Israel, I think it's important that we look at it from a halakhic perspective, not just from an emotional perspective. It's always a privilege to speak in front of my father and to thank him for all the unbelievable years of education and guidance that he gave me. My home was a home that always celebrated the ideals of religious Zionism, of Eretz Yisrael being Reshit Tzmicha Gulatenu. But there were a few years in which I had the opportunity to attend a high school which didn't exactly celebrate those same ideals. It was a little bit of a challenge between the Torah that I was taught at home and the Torah that I was taught in school. Going to the Israeli Day Parade instead of with my parents, instead of going to school on Sunday, was not met with a warm embrace the Monday afterward. Missing davening at Yom HaTzma'ut in school to daven in a more halakhically appropriate minyan, one that recognized the modern state of Israel, was not something that the Rosh Yeshiva was ecstatic about. And when I applied to Yeshivat Shalavim, while it was the normal custom for the principal of the school to extend a Hatzlacha on your Bechina before you took it, somehow, because I was applying to that oasis of modern Zionism, I was not afforded that 10-minute rendezvous with my principal before taking my Bechina outside the yeshiva. And in many ways, when I went to Yeshivat Shalavim for 2 years, I really had the opportunity to see the ideals really develop that I was taught in my home. The ideals of religious Zionism. I'll never forget the moment in which the Rosh Yeshiva finished giving shir, learning at 11 o'clock, and instead of going home, because he was a paratrooper still on active duty, he would jog the roads by Shalavim, or the Rebbe that I would share Shmirah with in order to be able to grab a few precious moments. A Rebbe who, the first time he traveled on a plane that he did not jump out of, was when he went to interview students a few years after I had attended Yeshivat Shalavim. And I'll never forget the opportunity that I had there to learn with an older Chavrusa, Shlomo Uman, who was my older Chavrusa in my first year of Shalavim, who was then killed in the Lebanon War. And I studied with him some of the ideals that we will share today. Let us try to concretize this idea of religious Zionism and see. It's interesting, when I gave this title, Is Zionism Diametrically Opposed to Judaism, the person who runs the program, Phil Moskowitz, told me he got a few phone calls wanting to know which side of the thing I would come out on. If the Kippah Sru God didn't give it away, I guess why you didn't give it away. But let's try to, in some way, look at this idea. It starts with a pasuk in the Torah, V'horashtem es ha'aret v'yishavtem bach, ki lechem nesati et ha'aret l'reshet otah. The mitzvah, the pasuk in Bamidbar, the pasuk that speaks about dwelling in the land of Israel, inheriting the land of Israel, source number one of the handout. This, the Ramban, from this pasuk and many other pasukim, concretizes the idea that this is a mitzvah in the Torah, the fourth mitzvah in the Torah, l'reshet ha'aretz asher nasan hakel yitbarach v'yitalel avotenu l'Avraham Yitzhak v'Yaakov. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us this mitzvah of living and inheriting the land of Israel, as it says in the Torah, it just speaks about the idea that when David HaMelech was forced to leave the land of Israel, that David HaMelech says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by forcing me to leave the land of Israel, exiling me from the land of Israel, when Shaul was pursuing David HaMelech, asked me to be involved in Avodah Zarah, in idol worship, because leaving the land of Israel is like idol worship. And the Ramban answered, says, Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael, living in the land of Israel, settling in the land of Israel, is shekula keneged kol ha-mitzvot shebetorah. It's like observing all the mitzvot in the Torah. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein comments on this. It's because the idea of living in the land of Israel allows one to live a Judaism that is not bifurcated. The capacity to have a government that can celebrate the ideals of Judaism, an army that is consistent with the values of Judaism, as well as a personal religious experience, which is not afforded a Jew living outside the land of Israel. Yet, there are distinguished poskim, distinguished gedolim, that have suggested that Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, is not a celebration of a mitzvah, is not a celebration of God returning to the land and giving the land of Israel to the people of Israel. The Satmar Rebbe Zatzal, in his famous work, writes how it is a satanic experience. It is a form of a deviant experience regarding Medinat Yisrael. And the question is, where are the sources to suggest, as many great Gedolim have in the past, and some still do, that Medinat Yisrael, or even living en masse in Eretz Yisrael, is against halacha, that Zionism is diametrically opposed to Judaism? Where are these sources from? And if we look at source number 3, we begin to explore the famous Gemara that is used by the Satmar Rebbe Zatzal in his discussions of this issue. Whether it's 3 Shavuot or 5 Shavuot, depending how you read the Gemara and Ksuvis, the Gemara says, Gimel Shavuot halalu lama, what are these 3 Shavuot? Achat shelo yalu Yisrael b'choma. The first one is that the Jewish people should not return en masse. The second is, V'achat she'eshpia HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Yisrael shelo yinardu b'mod b'olam. The second is that the Jewish people should not in any way rebel against the nations of the world. V'achat, and the final one is, she'eshpia HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Ovdei Kohavim shelo yishtabdu b'hem Yisrael yoter midai. That the nations of the world should not put the Jewish people into too much bondage, into too much servitude. 2 oaths which forbid the Jewish people to return en masse to the land of Israel. A second one, not to rebel against the nations of the world in resettling the land of Israel. This becomes the cornerstone of the Satmar approach regarding that Eretz Israel, Medina Israel, is a Maaseh Sakhar. And in fact, this idea is also highlighted in the Gemara and the Mishnah, or Bryson to vote highlights the idea that if a spouse wants to make Aliyah and the other one doesn't, you can force that spouse to make Aliyah. You can force that spouse. Or you are forced to give the spouse who does not want to make Aliyah again. In other words, if one person wants to make Aliyah, a husband wants to make Aliyah, a wife doesn't, the husband can give a wife a get. If a wife wants to make Aliyah and the husband does not, the wife can force a get upon the husband as well as receive her ketubah. Says the Tosfos there, Hu omer la'alot, ein anoheh bezman hazeh, it does not apply in our times, the ikas ha'kanes terachim, because it's dangerous to get to the land of Israel. It's dangerous. There was no El Al or Israel or Continental or any other airline of that nature. It was dangerous. And therefore, Sakanat Rachid, this mitzvah, like most mitzvot, are not Dovah Sakanat Rachid. But that reason is a temporary reason. But says Rabbeinu Chaim, Ahaya Omer Rabbeinu Chaim says, Ashad Eino Mitzvah Ladur Be'er Israel, it is not a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel. There are many mitzvot that are dependent on the land. But kama onshim, and there are many punishments if you don't keep those mitzvot, trumot and masrot, etc.
The eight unrecorded mitzvahs are haram. How can I keep them? Therefore, it's no longer a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel, says Rabbi Chaim. And therefore, it says the approach that now you cannot keep all the mitzvot that's loyal to Eretz. Therefore, it's no longer a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel. This, plus one more thing, just to round out the picture, how can it be that a Kaddish Baruch Hu would bring David Ben Gurion, Theodor Herzl, to help bring the redemption of the Jewish people? People that were not Shomrei Shabbat, Shomrei Mitzvot, how can it be that God would make them the conduits through which a Kaddish Baruch Hu would bring the redemption of the Jewish people? And therefore, based on the Gemara, based on the Tosfos that scouts all the Gemaras about forcing oneself to make Aliyah, based on the fact that the people who were involved in bringing the redemption of the Jewish people did not drink Kol Yisrael milk, therefore, it cannot be that the redemption of the Jewish people has begun at this point in time. So how do we do this? The first thing is, let us explore the Tosfos in two boats. You have a rush. As many of you are aware of, the rush is a summary most of the time of the Gemara, and also includes especially the opinions of the Tosafists, especially if it impedes or amplifies a certain Gemara. And so the rush, which basically represents the monic notes of the time, says the following. Hakol ma'alin Eretz Yisrael Yerushalayim, and if you want to be forced even to move from the Golan to Yerushalayim, even from a large place in the Golan to a small apartment in Katanon, you can be forced to move. Vafilu mi'makom sheruba Yisrael v'makom sheruba olivavim, you can be forced to move from outside of Eretz Yisrael in a place which is full of Jews to a place inside of Eretz Yisrael which doesn't have Jews, a city that doesn't have Jews. And it speaks about the idea that a spouse can force one spouse to make Aliyah. What the Rush does not have in here, and neither does the Mordechai, also a summary of the Tosafists, it does not have Rabbeinu Chaim's limitation that it no longer applies in our time because you can't keep the mitzvot of Tzuliyot Ba'aretz. Rabbeinu Chaim, who was the Talmud Muvuk of Rabbeinu Tam, who lived in the 1170s, who lived in Paris, his approach is not found in the Rush. With this in mind, the Maharit, who lived in Tzfat in 1568, eventually moved outside of Eretz Yisrael and died in 1639, the Maharit says, this Rabbeinu Chaim that's quoted in the Ketubot, it is something that none of the Rishonim have done in the Halakha Maisa. V'yisnihu l'ami yili, the Rav Chaim, I have underlined, in the single underline, the source number 6, it's not mentioned by any of the posters of Rishon Nachronim. And by the way, that I found that the Tshuvot of the Maharam that they argue on this. And even in where he has the double underline, he says the following: I checked Rabbeinu Chaim's responsa literature. Even in his responsa literature, when he deals with this issue, he does not mention the idea that a spouse cannot force another spouse due to the fact he can't keep in his boat. The only limit he puts on it, if it's dangerous to travel due to wars that are going on at that time. But even Rabbeinu Chaim, his responsa literature doesn't mention this. And therefore, the Maharit discounts in the 1500s, he discounts this, and he says that this is not part of the Dolgan Sham of Rav Chaim HaKohen. And later on, in the 1800s, Rav Zvi Hirsch Eisenstadt, who, as most of us know, we know people not by their names, but by their svarim, the Pisei Tshuva, which represents a summary of many of the responsa on every Siman of Shulchan Aruch, or most Siman of Shulchan Aruch, and then Ezer discusses a story where three families want to make Aliyah with their children, with their wives, and they have young children, 2 or 3 years old. And the basin of the city won't let them leave. The basin says, you cannot bring your children on this difficult journey. It's no longer a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel. Because what Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen said, you can't keep the mitzvah to live in the Ba'aretz. Don't bring your family to the land of Israel. So the three families in the early 1800s send a letter to Nefesh B'Nefesh explaining to them the challenge of the basement, and the larger basin responds to the small basin of the town. Don't we know that this Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen is not accepted? In fact, don't we know where I'm underlined, that is viewed as an error by a student scribe, that the student had his own notes and it got incorporated in Rabbeinu Chaim's Tosfos, but it's not in Rabbeinu Chaim's literature? We don't accept this Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen, not because we don't accept Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen, the Talmud Chachamim, the Rabbeinu Chaim, because we think that this is a mistake. No one quotes this Rabbeinu Chaim, not even Rabbeinu Chaim himself. In his own Tshuvot, don't quote this. It's a ta'ut, it's a mistake. And just in case the Ma'arit in the 1500s, or the Pesach Tshuva in the 1800s, who brings on the story, isn't strong enough to discredit what everybody calls a ta'ut in the Rabbeinu Chaim, Rabbeinu Chaim's own grandchildren in 1182 make Aliyah. They make Aliyah themselves. And in fact, met most of Rabbeinu Chaim's community from Paris in 1198, make Aliyah as part of the Fourth Crusade because of certain challenges that were going on in Paris at that time. So the first important issue is that Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen is not even quoted by Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen. It's not quoted by any of the other Rishonim, by those who summarize the Tosafist, namely the Mordechai and Rosh, by the Rishonim like the Ma'arit, even in the Pesach Tshuva, when it's brought down as a support, it's suggested that this is a ta'ut by the Talmud, and therefore it is not viewed as halachically significant. Going on further, what about the oaths? What about the Shavuot, the Mefurash of Devarah? It says, Shalom Yisrael B'choma. The Jewish people cannot return en masse to Eretz Yisrael. So you have the Av Basin of Sukhachov, the Av Basin of Nazer, source number 8, who, by the way, he mentions the 5 Shavuot, and I summarized it in 3, the Gemara says it, 5, 7, 3, but they're basically all the same. Source number 8, he says, no one brings down the Shavuot as halachically codified. There is not one Rishon, not one. There's not even a vocal minority of one. There is not one Rishon that brings down the Shavuot, the oaths, as halacha l'maisa. Not the Rambam, not the Rif, not the Rosh, not the Shulchan Aruch, or even the Tor. No one brings down any of the Shavuot as halacha l'maisa. And that's what the Avnei Nezer is saying, why the Rambam can still articulate the halakhic responsibility of a spouse to force another spouse to make Aliyah, while why the Rambam can say it's better to live in a city in Israel that is filled with non-Jews than a city outside of Israel that is filled with Jews. Why the Rambam can say that? Because no one codifies these Shavuot. These Shavuot are found as part of genre of Gemara, which is not halacha, but rather Haganata. And as we know from the next source, source number 9, we know from the next source that when you have Haganata, remember, Gemara is Parasha Balpeh. It is a celebration of the oral tradition. And part of Gemara is halacha, part of Gemara is Haganata. Haganata, we are to learn things from, but not halacha. So much so that the Novi Yehuda, one of the most important poskim, who even in our contemporary time, even though he lived in the 1700s, the whole idea behind organ donations, the permissibility of donating organs posthumously, the question is how you define posthumously, but whether you follow the approach of Rabbi Shechter or Rabbi Tendler, everybody agrees that it's a mitzvah to donate organs to save somebody else posthumously. It's just what the definition of death is. It's all predicated on a tshuva of the Novi Yehuda that highlights the idea of being able to do autopsies to be able to save other human beings. The Novi Yehuda, who in his tshuvas of Chalitza and Yibum, introduced the notion of posthumous paternity that even affect us in a contemporary period. He weighs in on this notion of Agadata, and he clearly highlights in the 1700s that it is that you are not allowed to learn halacha, l'maisa, min haggadah, min divrei medrash, because these gemaras are not for there. The gemaras you're supposed to learn musar, other things from them. But ein lamdim mehem sak halacha klal. You're not supposed to learn any halacha from them. So first you have Avni Nezer, who reminds us that no one brings these shvuot as codified halacha, and you also have the Gilgit Yudin, who reminds us that a gemara that is set within a haggadic genre is not a gemara that you can learn halacha from. But let us ignore the fact that not one Rishon brings down the shvuot as halacha l'maisa, and let us ignore the fact that you're not allowed to learn haggadah. You're not learning halacha from haggadah. Let's ignore that. There are still several ways of dealing with this issue. In an article in the Beis Yitzchak, and I did not put the author's name down there because it's me, the article in the Beis Yitzchak that deals with some of these issues around 20-some-odd years ago, there are several additional reasons why these shvuot don't really apply. First of all, from April 19th to April 26th in 1920, there was the San Remo Conference that was held in San Remo, Italy, where the post-war World War I Allied Supreme Council decided how to split up the Ottomans' peace of the Middle East. Britain received the mandate for Palestine and Iraq. France gained control of Syria and what we call today Lebanon, Beirut. And the conference also broadly reaffirmed the following: the reconstitution of a Jewish national homeland in Palestine without prejudice to the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, end quote. That's what happened in the San Remo Conference. Says the Or Sameach, Rav Meir Simcha Kohen Mitzvinsk, a well-known posseg. Says Rav Meir Simcha Kohen Mitzvinsk, with this in mind, one can clearly indicate that the Shavuot don't apply for another reason. It says that you cannot return to Eretz Israel without permission. But in 1920s, the nations of the world established the idea of having a homeland for the Jewish people. Obviously, the Or Sameach did not live to the time of the United Nations, which also established with great clarity, perhaps the only thing that they have done with great clarity, that there could be a salvation rights and called the League of Faith. It's the first time that East agreed with West. It was the first time he raised this in the 50s. It's the first time that the United Nations did something effectively. And perhaps, as he writes in the 50s, it's the only purpose for the United Nations. Now, salvation is not a prophet, but one is hard-pressed to find another productive thing that they've done in the 50 years since Rabbi Soloveitchik, or 50-plus years, since Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote that article. But what is clear is that there has been at least two major occasions where the nations of the world have introduced the concept of a Jewish homeland. And therefore, even if you said that the oaths had halakhic validity, they at that point would not have halakhic validity, because the oaths get destroyed once the nations of the world give permission. And finally, perhaps the strongest of proofs is found in a halakha that's found in the Shulchan Aruch. In Yoredei, the bottom of page 3, so we have to turn the page. Sivan Reishon Adav, Sivav, which reminds us of something that every one of you in this room know, and that is if two people make an oath, where one makes the oath on condition to another one. I promise to do this if you do that. If the person does not honor this piece of the responsibility, I am not obligated to honor my part. I don't need hatara, I don't need my part to be nullified. If my partner who makes an oath doesn't honor his piece, a tanai kafel, I don't have to honor my piece. This halakha does not just apply between two Jews, it applies between a Jew and a non-Jew, which is what the Shulchan Aruch tells us. Let us review for a moment the three oaths. Oath number one: the Jewish people cannot return en masse to the Jewish people, to the land of Israel. The Jewish people cannot rebel against the nations of the world. And the third one is that the nations of the world cannot oppress the Jewish people too much. Assuming that the first, second, third crusade do not fulfill that idea, that they have violated that prerequisite, definitely the Shoah, Auschwitz, Verbundler, Mauthausen, definitely Donning, definitely violates the idea of not abusing the Jewish people. And therefore, if it's a Tnai Kafel, which is the way the Gemara writes it, then if one side does not honor its part, the oaths fall away from a purely halakhic perspective. So even if you want to say, who cares that not one Rishon ever articulated this as a halakha? Even if you want to say, who cares that it's a gadita? Even if you want to say, who cares that the nations of the world have given us permission, what is clear is it's Tnai Kafel. A Tnai Kafel, both sides have to honor their peace. And what is clear is that the nations of the world, during the diaspora history, did not honor their responsibility.
Lest you think that this approach on the Shavuot is only being said by a young guy who's wearing a kippah sugah, there's an unbelievable sefer, which hopefully you're all familiar with, called Eim Habanim Smecha. By a show of hands, who's heard of that sefer beforehand? Good. So since you have heard of that sefer, I just want to, just for a few moments, just explain one thing, and that is that Rav Techtal, who was born in 1885, died on their way to Mauthausen in 1945. Rav Techtal writes the following in a newspaper in 1936. Zionism is a desecration of the holiness and defilement of the spiritual and earthly Holy Land. That was Rav Techtal's approach. Rav Techtal felt like many of the Rosh Yeshiva, many of the rabbinic great personalities of Hungary and of Czechoslovakia, Rav Techtal felt that one should not support the Zionist movement. I remember my mother's mother, my grandmother of blessed memory, telling me about the challenges that sometimes you would hear from Jews in Poland and Jews in Germany, that there was this idea of Poland, that Poland was interpreted by Rabbanim as Polin. This is where Jews are supposed to live, Polin, not in Eretz Israel. And the challenge within my grandfather's family of a youth aliyah to Israel, and how people had said that those who would make aliyah and the youth aliyah before the Holocaust, as my great uncle did and helped start Stael Yahu, were bound to basically throw away their Yiddishkeit in the Zionish environment of a modern Zionistic tradition. And Rav Techtal was of that opinion. But Rav Techtal, during the Shoah, realized the horrible mistake that he and other Gedolei Torah had made. And Rav Techtal writes a whole sefer, realizing the fact that redemption can come through a natural cause. The mistake that the Gedolim made, as he says so clearly, that the Orthodox Jews were silent, and it was better to, as he says, sheva al taisa, sit and do nothing, which was always their policy, and not be involved with the irreligious extremists who were involved in helping to settle the land. And he writes the fact that those who tremble, the Haredim, who stood on the sidelines and refrained from sharing the work, they stood by their age-old claim, it is preferable to sit and do nothing. And in the meantime, these initiators, the non-religious, began rebuilding the Holy Land, while the Orthodox Jews and the Tzaddikim stood aloof. It is clear that he who prepares prior to Shabbat will eat on the Sabbath, and since the Orthodox do not toil, they have absolutely no influence in the land. A challenge that even faces us heretofore, even now, because of the fact that we did not engage properly. Those who toil and build have the influence, and they are the masters of the land. Had we joined with the builders, our land would have looked very different today. And Rav Techtal goes further and he says that who will accept responsibility for the innocent blood that have been spilt in our days, that the Gedolim, who did refrain from engaging in the modern state of Israel, they too will have to answer for the blood of the Shoah, says Rav Techtal. It seems to me that all of the leaders who prevented the people from Israel from joining the builders cannot cleanse their hands and say, Yadeinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh, our hands did not spill this blood. Truthfully, one can judge these Orthodox Jews favorably by saying that they stood at a distance because of excessive caution. They were afraid that perhaps this movement would not be completely in the spirit of Torah as it should be. With all due respect, however, they overlooked the words of our pious mentor, the Chovas HaLevavos. One of the components of caution is not to be overly cautious. And therefore, he says, that I must confess the truth, says Rabbeinu Techtal, and declare my sin, because I too despise the rebuilding of the land, because I thought that the positions that I took with other Gedolei Torah was the right one. And I have no qualms about publicly expressing the truth that is now in my heart. And I am not afraid to debate any of the great and righteous Gedolim, because I was raised in an appropriate environment, and I realize the mistake that I made, says Rav Techtal. And Rav Techtal, who wrote the Sefer in hiding, gave the Sefer and paid a non-Jew to hold it. And after the Holocaust, requested that any members of the family that survived should take it. Many members of the family did not want to print the Sefer because it did not celebrate their gestalt on life. But his son understood his halachic responsibility, the tzav of his father, to print it. And Eim HaBanim Smecha was initially printed in its original, its Hebrew, and now has been translated. I encourage you all to read it. It articulates the things that we talked about. It articulates the ideas that Rabbeinu Chaim's approach is a non-starter. It highlights the idea of the Shavuot are non-starters. And it explains in great depth the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the capacity and the right to allow anybody to bring the redemption, and had the Orthodox Jewish community played an active role in the beginning, perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not have turned to the non-observant to play the role that they played in establishing Medinat Yisrael. This idea is highlighted in a few sources on page 4. If we turn to page 4, we are reminded of the Gemara, the Yerushalmi and Brachas, where the Yerushalmi and Brachas tells us that the redemption of the Jewish people happens kima kima. It does not happen in one fell swoop, but it happens like the sunrise, beginning just a little bit of light, and slowly but surely the light grows. The Gemara in Sanhedrin on 98a, the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Sadichet, where the Gemara says, how do you deal with the stira and psukim be'ita achishana? That in one time it says God will hasten the redemption, God will bring it in its time. In one place God says that Mashiach will come like on carpets, you know, from heaven. And in one place he says, Ani rochev al chamor, that Mashiach will ride like a poor man on a donkey. That there are two paradigms to redemption. One that comes if the Jewish people deserve it, merit it. But one that comes even if the Jewish people don't deserve it. That comes slowly through a natural process. Because redemption and repentance are not hand in hand. That's what the Ramban tells us in Parshat Hazinu. Vihine, second paragraph of source 13. Ein b'shira hazot t'nai b'tshuva v'avodah. It is not a prerequisite that redemption of Parshat Hazinu, the redemption, the final redemption, come with tshuva and service to God. It comes when God says the Jewish people need redemption. It can come after the ashes of Auschwitz, even if the Jewish people may not deserve it from a halachic religious perspective. Who am I to decide? But the Ramban is reminding us that there is no connection between the initial redemption of the Jewish people and tshuva and avoda. This idea is highlighted in the Ora Chaim in the 1600s, where the Ora Chaim in source number 14, if you look at the last few lines, Ki keitz hagalut yeshno, that there is redemption for the Jewish people, afilu Yisrael rishaim gemurim chas v'shalom, even if the Jewish people are totally all chas v'shalom rishaim gemurim. Redemption and repentance are not hand in hand. This Ora Chaim, which we do not have time to read in great depth, has another piece. It is predicated on the pasuk of ki yamu hachicha, when your brother is downtrodden and loses his assets. Umachar achuzato, uba hagalo hakarov elav. His relative should help him through those difficult times. But if his relative does not help him through the difficult times, any Jew has the responsibility to engage to help another Jew through trials and tribulations. says the Or HaChaim in the 1600s, Ki yamo chachicha, when the Jewish people will be downtrodden, and the Jewish people will need redemption. Uba hagalo hakarov elav. God will want the tzaddikim, the gedolim, the religious, who are close to him, to be involved in the redemption process. Second paragraph of Source 14. V'ogia katuv ki gulato hu biyana tzaddik, hasheyia karov la'Hashem. But the tzaddik will be too involved in dealing with the halachic responsa of Chav Yisrael orange juice, and will not have the time to be able to deal with the larger meta-narrative of the Jewish people. And therefore, says the Or HaChaim in the 1600s, Va'al zeh atidin litein hadin, kol Adonai ha'aretz gedolei Yisrael, u'mehem yivakesh Hashem elbon habayis ha'avuv. Because what will happen is that when we don't get engaged in the meta-narrative of the Jewish people, when we're only worried about ourselves and our tunneled vision, when we work in silos instead of in synergy, when we forget about the larger picture, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will return to others to help them redeem the process, even if they don't have the external components of observance as those who are karov hagalo hakarov elav, who are close to him. Says Rav Kook, it is not coincidental that that Tanakh uses, that the Navi uses the chamor. The chamor does not have the external signs of kashrut, but the chamor is the only non-kosher animal that requires pidyon peter rechem chamor, that requires a redemption for its firstborn. Because the chamor may not have the external holiness, but it still has holiness. Says Rav Kook, the people that founded the modern state of Israel, the Theodor Herzls and the David Ben-Gurions, they may not have had the external components of holiness, but they understood a vision for the Jewish people, and they are holy, and they are to be celebrated. And in fact, if one needs any further proof, says Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in source number 15, you have the idea of the Mitzoraim, the four lepers, Gehazi and his three children. Gehazi, who abuses the name of God in a public forum when he goes to Naaman, the general, and he says, Elisha, who cures you from the plague of Taras, who refused money, has a financial shortfall in his school for profits. He needs the money to pay the salaries. He'll take the check. And what happens is, Gehazi embarrasses Rabban Shel Klal Yisrael, the Navi of Klal Yisrael, in front of the world community, and he becomes a spiritual and is thrown out because he becomes a physical leper, a spiritual and a physical leper by the Jewish people, and he sits on the outside of the gates of the city. And as the city is besieged, he and his children realize that they have no future. So they surrender to the enemies only to come to the camp, hoping either to be killed or fed, to realize that the enemies have left, even though they are more powerful and the Jewish people are about to starve to death. He makes the decision then not to consume all the goods for himself, but he runs back to the community and he says, our enemies that surround us, their camps are fully intact, but there are no people there. They don't trust Gehazi initially, but they have no choice. So the few soldiers and the fewer horses that are left go out to check if Gehazi is truthful. And they find him to be the savior of the Jewish people. Says Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, if someone who can disgrace Rabban Shel Klal Yisrael can be the savior of the Jewish people, Ben Benos Shel Kal Vachomer, personalities that understood a vision for the future of the Jewish people, people like Ben-Gurion and others, even if they weren't faithful to certain components of the observance, it does not mean they cannot be a shliach of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the redemptive process. And perhaps this is what Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer in the 1700s, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, who lived from 1795 to 1874, it's interesting, when Rav Techtal writes his sefer, Eim Abanim Smecha, he has no one to get haskamas from. And how do you write a sefer without haskamas? So what Rav Techtal does is, he takes the haskamas that Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer got from Drishat Zion, when everybody was silent and Mitzvi Hirsch Kalischer reminded about building Medinat Yisrael, and he takes those haskamas and he cuts and pastes them into his sefer, and he says, I don't have even a sefer to write. I'm writing this all in the dark. If I don't have svarim, I obviously don't have haskamas. So I'm taking the haskamas from a sefer that I found in Budapest, known as Rishat Zion, the sefer of Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, and I'm putting them as a haskamas to my sefer, because the same gedolim that supported his philosophy will support mine as I do tshuva in writing the sefer. In 1862, Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer writes to the Rothschild family in Europe, and he says, Mi yadea in le'et kazot higat le'malchut. The Temple Mount is for sale. It's being sold cheap. There's a lot of debts. We know from the Netziv and others that post-Second Temple, the Karban Pesach was brought even without a Beis HaMikdash until the Hadrianic persecutions of 130, from the year 70 to 130. There are several different references that they were brought. In a later time also, there's some discussions whether the Karban Pesach was brought. Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer goes through all the reasons why it's halachically permitted to bring the Karban Pesach, even when the Jewish people are totally tameh. It's probably Rabbi Hain, who I met as we were crossing between classes. He probably may have mentioned this stuff. But Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer reminds us of the following. Gulat Yisrael u'Mashiach Tzidkenu, the redemption of the Jewish people, Mashiach, Asher anachu chokim lo kol hayom, which we wait for every day. Al yachshov ha'chashev, ki pitom yirad Hashem yitbarach shalom yishmaim v'arif. Don't think that God's going to one day come down and say, hey, it's time to leave. The redemption has come. That's not the way it works. Eventually, all of the promises and the prophets will happen. But the final paragraph of Source 16, Reshit HaGuvah, the beginning of the redemption, will be predicated on the natural activities of humankind, about Al-Yidei Ratzon HaMalchiyot, and the responsibility and the kings allowing us to come back out of Adonai Kodesh to the land of Israel. Redemption happens when we initiate it. Redemption happens when we engage. The famous Gemara, the Mishnah, that says, in the time of Mashiach, there'll be a lot of chutzpah. Pnei Dor and Pnei Akelev. The face of the generation will be like the face of Akelev. The young will not stand for the old. And what's the last refrain of that Mishnah? V'amil Yisha'ein, and who will rely on? Avinu Shabbat Shemayim, God in heaven. Most people look at that refrain and say, don't worry, everything will be okay. You can rely on God. Said there is salvation. You can cheer once. No, that's the ultimate chutzpah. And when someone says, don't worry, God's going to do it, that's the quintessential chutzpah. That's the ultimate chutzpah. When someone relies on God, it doesn't engage fully ourselves. Gemara Sanhedrin, which tells us we want to know the redemption of the people, just look at the land. When the land will be able to feed its inhabitants, which it wasn't able to do by the Turks, it wasn't able to do by the British. There is no better symbol that redemption has happened, as Rashi says, because you became here with Israel, when the land of Israel will give its fruit with a beautiful eye, when oranges will be the size of grapefruits, then you know the redemption has come. And perhaps this can help us understand the final Gemara that I bring down to their source, the Gemara of God. I maintain a point of personal privilege. The person who introduced me, Avi Yaron Polanski, who was sitting through this year, he works for the Center for Jewish Future and is going to sleep in next year. And he just received earlier this week that he received the Webster Award. So I want to wish him a mazel tov for receiving the Webster Award for the program. And with the final Gemara here, Santi, sorry about that. There are two angels in heaven that argue what this pasuk means in Yeshayahu, the Santi Kakot in Shoshayah, that the stone that will guarantee the redemption, the light of redemption, is the stone of Kakot.
Levi, Train, Alfinger, Gia. Gabriel and Michael. Gabriel and Michael. But Amrila, some say that this was an argument not only in the Yeshiva Shamala, but in the Yeshiva Shamata, Trey Amarei, Amarei, and Araba, Umayimu, who are they, Yehuda Chizkia, the neighbor of Yehi, Yehuda Chizkia. What is the Shoham? What is the stone cut code? Chad Omar Shoham, one says it's the stone known as Shoham, but Chad Omar Yashbet, and one says it's the stone of Yashbet. Where's the Shoham stone found? No, anyone? Where?
The
Choshen, right, in the Rukumin, in the birthplace, in the Yashbo also. Shoham stone is whose stone? Which squad does that represent? A little trickier. Anyone? The women would. Anyone? Anyone?
Yosef.
What? Who said that?
Yosef.
Yosef, correct. It's the stone of Yosef. And Yashba, whose stone is that? Whose stone is that? No. Binyamin. The stone of Binyamin. So you have the stone, the Shoham is the stone of Yosef, and Yash is the stone of Binyamin. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yes, God knew, which is it? Which is it? God says, Lahabi Kedin in the day. You want to know the stone that brings the redemption of the Jewish people? It's a hybrid of the stone of Shoham and the stone of Yashba. It's a hybrid of the stone of Yosef and the stone of Binyamin. Says the Marsha on this Gemara.
The stone of Yosef represents the physical redemption of the Jewish people. It's the Mashiach ben Yosef. It's the physical redemption of the Jewish people. The responsibility of Yosef is always to guarantee the physical redemption of the Jewish people. The stone of Binyamin represents the spirituality of the Jewish people. Binyamin is the location of the Beis HaMikdash. You want to know when the redemption is coming? V'samti kadkod shem shoshayach. When you have the hybrid of the stone of Yosef and the stone of Binyamin. When you have a Tzva Haganah Yisrael that guarantees the physical redemption of the Jewish people, and you have more learning going on in the state of Israel than you've had since the beginning, since the second Beis HaMikdash. The Samti Kadkod Shem Shoshayach, you want to know what celebrates the redemption of the Jewish people. The angels argue about this. The Amorayim argue about this, and God says it's not one or the other. It's the capacity to merge with all the trials and tribulations, with all of the difficulties. It's the capacity to merge the power of Yosef and the power of Binyamin together. This is Reshit Smichat Gulatenu. It's not Sof Gulatenu, and it's not Shetehei Reshit Smichat Gulatenu. It is Reshit Smichat Gulatenu. And it's not coincidental that Hey Iyar, the fifth of Iyar, if you look at Svirat HaOmer, where every single day has a mystical connotation, a mystical message, Eretz Yisrael is known in Kabbalistic literature as Tiferet, as the splendor and glory of the Jewish people. Look at the mystical message of the fifth of Iyar, and you will see that it represents Yesod Shebet Tiferes, the first stage, the basis of the splendor, the beginning of the splendor. That's the message, the mystical message that is found every single time that we recite Svirat HaOmer on Hei Iyar. That's the message that we need to represent and celebrate. We dare not stay on the sidelines when HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us the gift of Medina Yisrael. We recognize its trials and tribulations. It is by no means perfect. It is by no means complete. It is by no means finished. But it is the beginning, and it's what we have. And we dare not be silent, and we dare not forget to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this matana that our great-grandparents and our grandparents would have given their lives in order to be able to, in one day, have the opportunity. They, their whole lives, said they could not wait to touch the walls of the Kotel. And we can make the decision right after this class to book a flight and tomorrow touch those walls. We dare not forget about this gift, and we dare not allow anything to separate us from our responsibility to embrace Reshit Smichat Gulatenu. Thank you.